call the meeting of the Queens Municipality Regular Council meeting to order Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. A reminder that you should put your phones on mute and that the meeting is being audioed and video recorded, and no other such recording should be made. Changes or approval to the agenda? Are there any changes or approval to the agenda? If not, I ask for a motion to accept the agenda as presented. Moved by Councilor Brown, seconded by Councilor Romero. All in favor? Passed. Welcome to Peter and Linda. Linda coming with you as well, Peter?
Yes, she is.
For a presentation from Queens County Museum. Would you like to?
I'm literally for one.
Yep, see you later.
Find yourselves for a table.
Come on, look at my head.
Peter?
I didn't know.
And Peter, you and Linda are going to introduce each other?
Yes, we are. Now, it's on. Just gonna. It's not clicking.
A little button on the side?
Oh. I warned them that I'm not very good technically. I've gotta go. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
My name is Peter Leslie. I'm the chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Queens County Museum. I'm new. And beside me is Linda Rayfuse, who I'm sure you all know. Linda is the director of the Queens County Museum. I've been chairman for about a month. Linda has been director for almost since I was born. And between the two of us, we're here to do a presentation on the Queens County Museum tonight. Now, I'm sure you'll be happy to know that we're not here to ask you for money. We're not here to ask for anything. This is just an information session. One thing we've noticed over time is a lot of people have ideas about the Queens County Museum, and to put it bluntly, they're wrong. So we're here just to inform you. If you already know what we're going to tell you, that's great. If we manage to teach you anything tonight, that's even better. Now, here we go. Who are we? Well, we're actually four organizations. We're the Queens County Historical Society, and I'm going to go through and talk to you, explain who each of these is. We're the Queens County Historical Society. We're the Queens County Museum Board of Trustees. Queens County Museum and the Queens County Museum of Justice. And there's two other entities we're going to talk about tonight. Perkins House, obviously, and the Milton Blacksmith Shop. Now, I'm going to tell you that they are actually not part of the Queens County Museum. But if we didn't talk about them tonight, then during the entire presentation, you'd be thinking, what about the Perkins House, and not paying attention to me. So rest assured, we're going to talk to you about the Perkins House. I'm old-fashioned enough, you know, that I reflexively want to look at the paper version of this, and I have the electronic version on the wall over here. So the Queens County Historical Society was founded in 1929. This was Tom Riddall and all his crowd. And in 1929, they met, they formed the society, but it wasn't until 1934 that it was actually incorporated into a legal entity. Now, just so you know, for those of you who are legal buffs or interested in this type of thing, although the word society is in the name, it actually is not a society under the Societies Act. It has its own piece of legislation, and it is an entity unto itself. It's not governed by the Societies Act. It was incorporated in 1934 by the legislature of Nova Scotia. And I'm not going to read. I've given you the text of the objects of the society. I'm not going to read it to you. It's a very 1934 type of thing. But basically, what it says is, hey, we're the museum for the county, and our object is to collect, preserve, and to make available to people and make people aware of the history of the county. Next, we have a Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees is a body of the Historical Society, and it's created by the Historical Society's bylaws to oversee the operations of the Queens County Museum. So the Historical Society is on top, the Board of Trustees is underneath the Historical Society, and the Board of Trustees basically, their job is, the Board of Trustees and the museum are almost indistinguishable, as the lawyer in me cringes when I say that, because of course they're vastly distinguishable. And the members of the Board of Trustees are appointed by the Historical Society. And their job, like I say, is to oversee the museum. And then we have the main entity, the Queens County Museum itself. Now, the Queens County Museum, in addition to the Historical Society's objectives, which are actually broader than the museum's objectives and older, the Queens County Museum is there to promote an understanding of Queens County history and an awareness of Queens County's, well, frankly, future possibilities. We develop, preserve, and exhibit a significant collection, which is growing every day. And we'll talk about that a little later. The size of the collection is causing us problems. We take a significant role in leadership and scholarship in the context of the history of Queens County. We engage and provide access to audiences locally, nationally, and internationally. We deliver innovative programming. A lot of this is obviously a little, what can I say, restrained right now because of COVID. But the museum endeavors to deliver programming throughout the year in normal times. And that's something that we're probably going to work on expanding in the future. We want to be a world-class museum, and we apply museum standards, which is very important. When you see an exhibit at the Queens County Museum, you can be assured that we know the provenance of that exhibit, or we can tell you there is no provenance. And therefore, it might be what somebody says it is, or it may have been purchased at Walmart the day before. I mean, we've all watched Antiques Roadshow, I'm sure. So you know the significance of not having a provenance of something. And we're part of the Community Museum Assistance Program. We're one of 63 museums across the province. And the Museum Assistance Program, Community Museum Assistance Program, we call it CMAP, is the funding program that the province administers to fund community museums in the province. We'll talk about this a little later. There's a big difference between a CMAP museum, a museum that's funded through the CMAP program, because they're partially funded, as opposed to a provincial museum, such as the Maritime Museum in Halifax, which is 100% funded and directly, in a way, directly managed by the province. So, what does the museum do? Well, we catalog and maintain a collection of historical artifacts. And that's a big, that word catalog means a lot. But we don't just have a building up there full of stuff. We cross your fingers, pray, we know what we have and where it is, right? We get evaluated on this every 4 years, and one of the evaluation tests is they pick something out of the blue out of our records and we have to go find it for them. And so far it's always worked, but you know, cross your fingers, like I say. The artifacts are professionally curated and cataloged, and where possible, we professionally preserve them. That's a bigger problem, because the preservation of artifacts is, frankly, expensive. And sometimes, on a long-term basis, it requires a physical facility to preserve, and you know, we have what we have. We interpret the history of Queens County. This is a big one. We maintain a genealogy archive and provide research support. I always tease Linda here that she just has it all memorized anyways. So if you have a question, just ask her and she'll know it off the top of your head. But genealogy over the years has become increasingly more popular and increasingly popular. You certainly see it with the DNA tests that you can get now. There's TV shows on the television where they do, you know, famous people's genealogy. And people are interested in this stuff. It brings people to Liverpool from all over the world to do genealogical research. And so the genealogy archive is important. We work with the community to, as people do their genealogy, we work with them to deposit their research with us so that it can be shared with everybody else. And obviously we have to work with other genealogical centers around. The biggest ones for us being Shelburne and Lunenburg, because they're right next door. And we also maintain an archive of information of general interest. When I first learned about this, I thought, oh, we're just a dumping spot. But everything from old school records to copies of the local newspapers to photographs and pictures are at the museum. We strive, again, to catalog and record everything that we have to make it easier to find things. Obviously, if you're looking for a particular newspaper article, do we have everything back to, when did newspapers start in Liverpool?
1862.
See, she's got this stuff memorized. It's great. And so 1862, and we basically have all of them up to when the Advent stopped publishing. We can't find your story for you, but we can find a particular edition for you. And so that's what part of what we do. It's all there, and it's all, like I say, it's as organized as it can be. If you're looking for a photograph of a particular person, then you're going to have to sit there and go through a bunch of photographs. But at least we've got them in boxes. We undertake activities for the public. We try our best to make the museum part of the social fabric of the community. We didn't this year because of COVID, but we normally have an Easter celebration. We have the Christmas Festival of Trees in Dickensville. What did I leave out there?
Halloween.
I knew there was one. And, you know, you're probably wondering, what does an Easter egg hunt have to do with the history of Liverpool? Well, not a heck of a lot. But you do these things to get people used to coming to the museum. If somebody can come for an Easter egg hunt with their children and make the museum less of an imposing spot, if they can have a look around while they're there and want to come back, we feel that we've done our job. So as much as possible, we interact with the community. We provide support to anyone interested in the background and history of the community, including the maintenance. We have a library. It's of course we have a library, but we have a library of historically relevant books where we can provide you books. I don't know, some of you may know I'm a knitter, and when I wanted historic patterns for mittens, where do I go? But I go to the museum, and they were able to provide it for me, and I've never returned that book, by the way. I owe that to you. But they know I have it, and it's much the same as we have cookbooks. We have a significant collection of old home remedies. I don't know if from the Simeon Perkins diary, if you know what the remedy for rickets is, but we throw you down the well and let you sit in the cold water for a day, just to. The Queens County Museum building, this is just a bit of interest. The building we're in, and this is the museum building, it was built in 1980 by the province of Nova Scotia and the Historical Society. It was cost shared. And The Historical Society signed over its interest to the province in return for which the province now owns the building and maintains the building. Queens County Museum pays the operating expenses. We pay the electrical bill, the province fixes the gutters, you know, the type of arrangement. Now, and lastly, we have the Queens Museum of Justice. This is the old courthouse that you're all familiar with. It operates under the auspices of the Queens County Museum. It is not technically part of the museum, and that's very important for us, to us, for funding reasons. We have certain funding that is intended only for the Queens County Museum, and we cannot spend it on things like the Museum of Justice. The courthouse is leased from the region. If most of you are new, two of you aren't, you remember signing the lease last year for last spring. We're in the first year of a 5-year lease. And the museum is unfunded by anyone. It operates purely on donations from the public. Now, we're going to talk about things that aren't part of the museum, but are of interest. Milton Blacksmith Shop. The Blacksmith Shop began as an entity of the Milton Heritage Society, which formed in the early 1980s. And it was the Heritage Society was formed to preserve the Blacksmith Shop. It was a community-run blacksmith shop. Jack, you probably know this better than I do. But it was a community-run blacksmith shop that was built in 1903. The building was owned and maintained by the Milton Village Commission. And of course, the regional municipality inherited it from the Milton Village Commission. There's a memorandum of understanding around somewhere. Anyways, the Queens County Museum looks after the administrative needs of the Milton Blacksmith Shop. So I don't know if you've all been to the blacksmith shop, but it's pretty small. There's no room for an office. And frankly, there's no administrative staff. So we do everything from paying their bills to if there's a summer student hired, which there is every year, I believe you take care of that, don't you? There is one employee currently who runs the Milton Heritage Society. Who runs the museum. He's an employee of the Milton Heritage Society. And the Queens County Museum charges an administrative fee, an annual administrative fee for the work it does. However, the administrative fee is minute, if there is one at all, because it depends on whether there's any money left over. We don't make money off this. And then Perkins House. It's almost done. I'm sure you'll be glad to know. What's the anticipated finish date?
They'll be in there about 3 more weeks.
So, pretty close to being done. I believe the exterior is finished. And the interior is, I haven't really been inside of it yet, but I'm hearing great things about it.
It's being plastered and painted.
Yeah. And apparently the colors that are being used have been the subject of great debates and practically fistfights, and because they've got to use time appropriate colors and shades of colors, and of course companies can even, it's not just the color, but you've got to make it look like it's something that was used in the 1700s. The Perkins House was originally purchased by the Historical Society in 1934. From the family, the descendants of Simeon Perkins. And I don't know if you noticed it, the Historical Society was incorporated in 1934. It purchased it because it had to be a legal entity to purchase the house. It was turned over to the province in the early 1940s. When it was originally purchased, it was opened as a museum. And I believe the Queens County Museum's collection, or the Historical Society's collection at that time, was exhibited in the Perkins House. It was turned over to the province in the early '40s. The province opened it as a museum in 1957. It's one of the Nova Scotia Museum's 28 sites that are fully funded. Perkins House is fully funded by the province. It's the funding for Perkins House and Queens County Museum are completely separate. It's locally managed by the Queens County Museum. The Queens County Historical Society manages it for the Nova Scotia Museum. That flows down through so that Linda here manages the Perkins House. Transportation, well, TIR maintains the building. We get an annual grant for Perkins House, which is intended to fully fund its annual operations, everything from salaries and wages, utilities, advertising, and the Queens County Museum merely administers the funds that are given. Queens County Museum funding, this is always important. Our annual expenses run about $110,000 a year. This is for the Queens County Museum only. 30% of that comes from that CMAP, the Community Community Museums Assistance Program. 4% comes from the region, roughly. We get a $5,000 grant every year. That's been unchanged since the creation of the region. We make about 9% of our the annual funding from the gift shop, about 4% from donations, and about 45% comes from fees charged for Perkins House administration, and 5% comes from other services. We charge research fees for involved genealogical research. We photocopy for people. We sell the copies of photographs, things like that. It's very important to note that some of this funding, for instance, the CMAP funding, is only for the Queens County Museum. We cannot spend it on the Museum of Justice or the Milton Blacksmith Shop. The Milton Blacksmith Shop also gets funding, a tiny bit of funding, from the CMAP program. Now, I just want to point out that going to go back there for a second, just so you know that 45, you see that line, 45% from fees charged for Perkins House administration. That's not an administrative fee. We don't say to the province, you know, for $47,000 a year, we'll run your museum. That's a lot of shared costs, things like that. It's you won't see a line on our financial statements that indicates a revenue from the province in return for managing purposes. Now, COVID funding. This is important because donations, gift shop sales, and services are all important, and services for the public are all important revenue streams. If you look at that slide from before, all of these have been reduced or become almost non-existent during COVID. In last year, the federal government gave funding that local museums could qualify for, and we were lucky enough to qualify for some of that funding. In 2021, there's no mention yet of federal funding, and if you hear of anything, let me know. But right now, we haven't heard anything. The province has given no COVID funding to local museums. They're still funding their provincial museums, of course, but those 63 museums who were funded by CMAP, they're only funded partially. They've lost all the sources of income because donations, things like that, are a big source of income for these museums. And the province gave no funding last year, and there's been no mention this year. And so we'll just have to wait and see. Future plans. We're looking at an expansion of the museum site. You may think, why? If you walk into the museum, one of our biggest problems is that our collection has become so massive literally space that should be dedicated to displays and exhibits is in fact being used for storage. And that's a problem. There's an upstairs to the building that's full. And then downstairs, things are pretty crammed in there. It shouldn't be as tight as it is, but we're just in a space crisis. And it becomes a question of, you know, what do we do? Do we get rid of some of our collection, which we don't want to do, obviously. We can't just, you know, put things in a storage facility, because a lot of these things require special conditions. And so it's a difficult problem. A new site would contain new exhibit galleries and additional space for storage. We also want to focus on the Mi'kmaq and the Black communities. Right now, there are some displays, and we have information available, but just because the museum is, we're so limited in our facility right now, we can't really meet these obligations properly. So we're looking at a special focus. We're also looking at being able to focus more on the Port of Privateers and Liverpool's privateering heritage. To carry out plans like this, of course, we do have that inconvenience that the province owns our building and our land. Notice I say it's our building, our land, but they just own it. And so obviously we can't expand our building without their okay. And so we're working with that. And this expansion would be funded by federal and provincial sources and donations. And that's everything. Just like I say, just a bit of an informational lesson, I guess. And I didn't ask you for any money at all, so you don't have any hard decisions to make. But if you do have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
We will take questions if anyone has any questions. And thank you for differentiating between all those bodies that you are involved with. It's always helpful to us to do that. Any questions? Councilor Brown.
I had two questions.
Sure.
We talked to, we had some people in from TIR. And they said at one point that the Perkins House Museum is the oldest private dwelling in North America. Is it okay? I'm just curious because I'd never heard that before, and
no.
I thought it would be quite a selling.
Perkins House is the oldest house in the Nova Scotia Museum system.
Okay. Right. The other question I had was.
It was built in 1766.
1766. So we have older houses in Liverpool itself, don't
Dexter's
we?
Dexter's Tavern is older than
yes.
Perkins House
yeah.
by a few years.
Yeah.
Down the street.
Yeah. The other question I had was what time frame are you looking at for the expansion?
We don't know yet. We're so at the beginning.
Okay.
We don't know. It's a really difficult time these days to go to government and say, oh, could we have an extremely large amount of money? It's also difficult, I'll be honest, they just spent a whole bunch of money on Perkins House.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly the federal government may not care, but the provincial government is going to look at that and say, well, should we be spreading it out a bit more? We've certainly got our job cut out for us. So it's not going to happen in the next year or two, I'm sure. But I shouldn't say that, who knows?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, one thing you guys have mentioned here about is that people are phoning in for genealogies. And so do you have people that may think like, well, I wonder how my parents or great-great-great-grandparents came over and try to find back to the history of them landing in Nova Scotia in the first place?
Yep. We get genealogical inquiries from all over the world, especially North America. Descendants, it would really boggle your mind if you knew where the descendants descendants of early Queens County people are in this world. And they do continue to inquire about their family histories. And we offer that research when some of them can't come. We offer that research for them.
Okay, thank you.
And Linda, I know that Queens County Museum represents all the history of Queens.
Yeah.
And so genealogy people are from all of our forefathers and
yeah.
and all the regions.
Yeah.
And it's always busy there.
And North, it's not to be forgotten too that North Queens Heritage House has a really nice little archives as well. Because there's a lot of descendants from North Queens that have been spread out around North America, and so they have the nice archives as well.
Yeah.
Well, if there are no further questions, I thank you.
Thank you.
And may you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much.
Tabling of petitions. Are there any petitions to table? 5.0, public question comment session. I remind those making any comments or questions, so please state your name and your civic address before beginning. Who's up first? Any public, anyone wishes to make a comment?
Good evening, Mayor and Councilors. I have a question for you,
David, I know who you are, but you have to do it for the record. Name and civic address.
I thought it was a, David Husky, 160 Church Street.
Thank you.
One concern, each fall they put out about these parking in the winter. That they have to have the car off the street. And I'm wondering who has the lead to get them moved. Is it the police, or the ones that plowing, or whatever, if they're in the street and plowing?
I'll direct that question to our CAO because I do not know the answer to that.
That would be the RCMP.
It's the RCMP.
And so anybody can make a complaint, so a resident can make a complaint. Our staff, the plow operator, could make the complaint. Our bylaw enforcement officer or our engineer who's on duty on Cape Day can make the complaint. But it would have to be the RCMP with the ability to enforce the Motor Vehicle Act, which is what it's covering.
So has it been any in the last few years?
I can't answer that. You'd have to ask the RCMP that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishes to speak?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Liv Hottenberg, and I live in Hunts Point, Rose Lane, 10 Rose Lane. I'm in grade 7 at South Queens Middle School, and I'm here to speak on my behalf of my peers and our Liverpool community. We thank you for taking the invite to write to the Minister of Environment for asking for further water quality testing to be done. We understand from the minister's response that it would be the municipality that would have to take the lead on testing the Hood River and finding the source of the high intercompti levels. Monday, March 1st, our students will be having a Zoom meeting with Bernadette Jordan. We would like to know if the mayor and council have thought about what steps will be taken to further test the Mersey River for intercompti. We also are wondering for the municipality that will attempt to seek out the source if they find due to their contamination.
Thank you for your questions. And the minister's letter, which you received, because I sent it to your teacher, quotes Projects are often led by local organizations, to which we may provide guidance upon request. Municipalities are local governments. What the Department of Environment does is it provides guidance to local organizations, such as Blue Nose Coastal Action Center. Or if you, as a school group, wish to further the project along, Department of Environment would assist you in explaining where the water test should be done, the proximity to Oak Falls, etc. And they did provide David Clark's phone number, who's the local representative. Local organizations does not specifically say, Department of Environment says it's the local municipality's job to do water testing in rivers, because it is not our job to water test rivers or lakes for levels of bacteria. What we will do is we will look after our own system. The outfall at the end of Waterloo Street is our responsibility. The former town built it. This region has to correct that. And we've reapplied for funding levels from provincial and federal government. But that is our responsibility, not water testing the Mersey River or the Medway River or Pond Hook Lake or Port Medway. That's not the responsibility of our tax dollars and our tax people to water test for malfunctioning sewers. And as you can also tell from the letter, the minister said how difficult it is for the Environment Department to just randomly go on people's properties. They need to have complaints from people in order to gain access to those homeowners. And it is the homeowner's responsibility to have working septic systems. That's what the letter says.
Hello, Mayor and Councilors. My name is Jill Luchner. I live at 452 East Berlin Road. East Berlin, VOJ1HO. I'm just wondering, do you know how much it costs to have testing done, that type of testing done?
We do not.
Is this something that we would be able to, you think, our students would be able to fundraise for or apply for a grant to have done?
I would suggest that if your students are interested, that they do seek that out. There's lots of available grant programs. You could speak to Blue Nose Coastal Action Center, which is located in Bridgewater, in Lunenburg. You could speak to David Clark about what type of funding programs there are available. But again, if there's malfunctioning septic systems, it's going to rest upon the homeowner, not the municipality of Queens, to correct that situation.
So based on what you were just saying there, I was just reading through the letter. So the minister states in his letter that in order for enforcement action to take place on a malfunctioning system, it must be confirmed by an NSC inspector. However, an inspector will not go on site to confirm a malfunctioning system unless the public has provided reasonable grounds for them to do so. So I'm curious to know, if finding extremely high internal cocci levels at locations along the river, the grounds of public testing, like we did, is not enough reasonable grounds to confirm a malfunction problem, then what exactly would be other than digging up your neighbor's front lawn? How would you possibly know otherwise, other than testing the water and finding it a high internal cocci levels, that there would be malfunctioning systems along the river?
That's a question you're going to have to direct to the Minister of Environment. Those are his words, and there's a new Minister of Environment announced today. So those are his words, and what the provincial government states their responses on, you will have to ask either the minister or David Clark. Because provincial government is very separate from municipal government.
Okay.
And so that reasoning is their reasoning.
So I just understand that you don't want to have any responsibility ensuring that people's septics are
not our jurisdiction. It clearly states it's not our jurisdiction. We cannot go on people's properties as a municipal government and investigate their septic systems. It's a NSC inspector, Nova Scotia Environment Inspector. And we simply can't go on people's properties. Correct?
Okay, so then if nothing's done about this then, and then our kids keep swimming in the river, like Leah here swims with her friends under the Henry Hennessy Bridge, the place where on January 11th we just tested, and we found numbers of 758 enterococci levels per 100 milliliter. That's like four times the amount for what you should be allowed to swim in or touch your skin. I just feel like the municipality should be a little bit more supportive in this, and rather than just saying this is not our, this is not anything to do with us, this is not our responsibility, I feel like there should be a little bit more from you guys in this matter. But yes, I will certainly be in touch. I've already been in touch with Coastal Action, and I certainly will be getting in touch with them and asking them how much this costs and whether this is something that we can do on our own. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Leah, for coming in and attending our meeting and standing up and speaking on behalf of your peers. I know your dad's quite proud of you. Any other public comment questions?
Don?
Yeah.
Good evening, Lordship, fellow councilors. Chief Conray, Greenfield District, 4960 Midway River Road. I'm here tonight with my fellow chiefs. We were told that the EMO Comfort Center agreement was done tabled and on tonight. We just came here to see, to sit, to listen. No one was going to talk, and I said, well, maybe one of us could talk. So I'm talking about it. It's been a year or two now, and we've been back and forth. This said, he said this, I said this, you said that. And basically, we just had enough of the everything onto it. We had a meeting, and you guys were all here tonight with our emergency services, and we just said, okay, enough's enough. We're just gonna, whatever you guys wanna do, you wanna do, we'll all agree with it. But we just wanna make sure that everybody knows that this has been a heartache for all of us, and you know, things were said, and we wanna make sure that people realize that. I know everybody does. But whatever happens tonight, and we're gonna back it the best we can. Just let the public know that we're always out there, we're always gonna be there for them, we're never gonna shut down, we're always gonna be there for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Conrad, and I think there's been grievance on both ends. And we look forward to your presentation coming up March in the evening, March 9th. And Heather, did you go to see if Chief Wynot is still there?
I did, and I didn't see him. I went outside, and he wasn't there.
Okay, thanks. 6.0, approval of the minutes of Tuesday, February the 8th. Moved by Councillor Hawk, seconded by Councillor Gidney. The minutes be approved. All those in favor? It's passed. I will need a motion to on table this item. Moved by Councillor Charlton, seconded by Councillor Hawks, that the motion be on tabled. All those in favor? So the motion's on table. So at the fire services meeting that was held recently,
I bought that one.
Take that one off. Call that one free. You didn't hurt your back or anything. So the chair snapped. So at the last fire services meeting, this was added on request of the fire chiefs. And basically, there are two changes they would like made. And the first, and I'll read them out, and you can think about them. The first is that this agreement shall be reviewed on an annual basis by council. And the second has to do with the lump sum of the comfort station. And the sentence is to be added, in cases where the reasonable cost of providing this service exceeds this daily rate, a facility owner may submit original receipt for consideration of reimbursement via the municipality. Are there any other changes that any member of council would like to see made? If not, then is there consensus that those changes will be made to the memorandum?
Yep.
Yes. Consensus on that?
Mm-hmm.
If so, then we need to go back to our original motion, which read, the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality, can you remake that again?
The motion's on the floor now.
It's on the floor now. So the motion is, as you will recall, the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approved the draft memorandum of understanding, knowing that those two items are to be added. Respecting the use of community facilities as a municipal comfort center or municipal emergency shelter during an emergency, and further that council authorized the mayor and chief administrative officer to enter into any agreements related to this memorandum of understanding with appropriate local community organizations that are interested. That is the motion as it so stands. Councilor Charlton?
I'll make that motion.
Well, the motion is on the floor.
Oh, we don't have to redo it.
Are there any other discussion points? Councilor Brown?
I think we need a motion to amend this motion where we have the two items.
I spoke to CAO about that, and we have a motion. We're simply going to, under consensus, add those two other items.
Okay, I thought since the motion was on the floor that we would have to make a motion to amend.
If, under normal circumstances, you would, but in this particular situation, the amendment would make the original motion out of order because it would be a completely different motion.
Okay.
So that's why it's the unique nature of this one. So.
Okay.
So this gets the job done.
Thank you for the explanation.
And it's to the satisfaction of the chiefs as discussed at the last fire service. You ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor? Contrary? Motion carried. A bylaw prohibiting certain noises. Councilor Brown, you wish this to be added. Would you like to speak on this?
Yes, I would. I've received calls from a number of residents in Queens County, not in just one area, and they've asked that Queens bylaw number 7 be updated. This is a 24-year-old bylaw, and the only thing that it covers right now is we have quiet hours from midnight until 6 a.m. Our bylaw only covers noises created by stereos, music instruments, things like that. It doesn't cover any other noise. So it doesn't talk to the quality of life of people around somebody who makes a noise. And it's way out of line with what other jurisdictions around the province have. Most of them have given at least 8 hours of quiet time for residents, which is, what the Department of Health says you need as sleeping time, 8 hours a day for the majority of people. And the majority of districts in Halifax, Kings, Shelburne, Digby, Lunenburg, Yarmouth all have limits on the decibel levels that reach adjoining properties so that it doesn't affect. So it's quantitative. Right now, when people call with a complaint about the noise, they're told that it's unenforceable because we don't have a bylaw that has any quantitative levels in it or any other noise besides stereos or loudspeakers. So I'd like to see staff research this and bring back a recommendation to update the bylaw.
Any other opinions or comments? Now, Councilor Charlton?
We've all been receiving these complaints about noise and the fact that dated, I think it does need to be revisited, so I would be in agreement with Counselor Brown.
Counselor Fancy?
Would abusive language, inappropriate language and things like that fall under this or not? I'm just saying, when you're doing it, do we need to make it more inclusive?
I do believe that is a criminal offense.
Right.
To be using abusive language in public.
Okay.
And some of the problems that are relating from this are things that would never be dealt with under a bylaw. Many things, I mean, it's a clear case of disturbing the peace.
Okay.
In one situation, which is a totally criminal offense. Our bylaws, 24 years old, I've asked your CAO, there's been very few complaints to this, except for the ones stemming out of that one situation. There's been very few, if any, bylaw complaints about noise since the beginning of the Region of Queens, which is 24 years. And, you know, do we try to fix something in one situation which is definitely disturbing the peace by changing a bylaw? I mean, that's a question I don't ask. We all know that we're in a busy time right now, and we can give direction to staff if we wish to have them examine other bylaws, ask if they actually work, ask if they're enforceable before we start beginning to change bylaws. Bylaws require a lawyer to change, and they require approval of the province. So it's not as easy a motion that we make, because we don't change these without legal counsel. So we, you know, so what type of direction do you really want to give staff? Do you want to give them direction to work with RCMP and look at the disturbance of the peace, which often matters are? Do you want to give them a certain time frame to look at other bylaws, understanding the time we're in right now, the time frame we're working in? I mean, what is it that you really want done as a region on a whole? I mean, do you all want a bylaw that allows 8 hours of quiet? I mean, think about what that really means. 8 hours of silence. Do you really want that? Councilor Gidden.
When I was going through the other municipalities to see what they have in play, sometimes there's time changes through the week. In the weekend, there's different times. In the County of Kings, there's no fighting, screaming, shouting, or singing. And that would be under somebody yelling. Yeah, so that makes sense. So if there has been a problem in the rest of the area, then I don't think if we change the bylaw, they're still going to work with it. It's just that one area. And if we have an area that there's a problem, we have to fix it. And if we fix it by the bylaw, then that's what we got to do. Because if there's a problem, we don't want it escalating, so we've got to take care of it at this point in time.
Councilor Hawks, you had your hand up.
No, I agree with Ralph on that we need to change that. Can we change it to, like, instead of a quiet time, like a DB level after 10 o'clock or whatever, right?
So we'll have to investigate those sound measuring devices.
Mm-hmm.
To see if they actually work, how close you have to be to get a reading, all those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
That, and then we'd have to purchase one.
Yeah.
And so, if I may, Madam Chairperson, we have to be careful at looking at other people's bylaws. Just because other people have bylaws doesn't mean they're correct or they're enforceable. I have reached out to a few municipalities, and no one I can find has ever issued a ticket under the noise bylaw. So while they have bylaws in place, they aren't enforcing them. The particular one in Kings County, I believe, only applies to New Minas, which is the urban area. So it doesn't doesn't apply to any of the other 40,000 people in Kingstown. It typically only applies to those in New Minas in the urban area. So we have to be careful that we don't misinterpret what's in the bylaws. And I often hear about decibel levels, and as the mayor said, you can't just go to a big box store downtown Liverpool and buy a decibel meter. You've got to buy a commercial one that is tested and meets a standard. So if you go to court, someone has to testify that it met a particular standard and that it's been serviced and maintained and the readings are correct and accurate on a regular basis. And it's not something you can buy just one, because if you have multiple RCMP cars or you have a bylaw enforcement vehicle, they're all going to need to have one in their vehicle to be available whenever they're on a call out. So we have to be careful with that. And the decibel levels limits are also problematic in the sense that decibel levels are very odd. So for instance, I just pulled off today, an alarm clock is 80. I think one of the bylaws says you can't be over 45. 45, a car driving by is 50. A conversation in your house is 60. So to just pick a number out of the air doesn't provide a lot of context for what we think we want to do. And I think in some of the situations it's very loud music, which gets the number much higher. And so there are some options to look at some of those things as well. But I just want to caution you not to read other people's bylaws and assume they're being enforced, because my research has shown they're not being enforced. And decibel levels are very complex to be able to enforce, as far as who's eligible to do it, who's properly trained, are the systems maintained, do they meet a court standard? Because when we go to court, we have to enforce our bylaw and our rules. We're not enforcing somebody else's rules. And so we have to just be careful that when we do make some changes, that we're comfortable and our solicitor is comfortable that what we're doing is enforceable in law for our particular community.
So is it the time? Is it the time people like to see change? Do you want it not at midnight to 6? What are some suggestions? Because staff will need some directions. They'll have to look and keep in mind that when you make these things, they'll mean for dances and all types of things that you might like to go to, or not, I shouldn't put it that way, not to a personal viewpoint. But let's say if it's 10 o'clock, then that means quiet at 10 o'clock at night all over Queens County. So is it the time? And if it's the time, what times would you suggest? Councillor Charlton?
Wouldn't there be provisions in that that would exclude, like, the Far Hall if they were having a dance? Because pretty sure that could be a possibility.
How many exclusions can you put in there?
Yeah, but there were other ones that I've read that said that excluded like special events and different things. Like, I would think that you would be able to put those provisions on there. You're not shutting the whole community down. That's not my wish.
But what time? What's the
time?
Well,
right now I think that 12 a.m. to 6 is not really that reasonable. It's saying that there should be exceptions for certain causes, but like 11 to 7 will give 8 hours of rest, like quiet time. I think that's a standard with most campgrounds use, is like 11 o'clock. Like, you can still be outside having a fire, but you can't have a raging party. So
11 to 7?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a night owl.
I think 11 to 7 is a reasonable time. I know most of the ones that I've read are based on Halifax rules, and they have a schedule, a class. Different noises have different, they have an appendix of schedules, and certain noises are allowed at certain times and not at others. And when we talk about the decibel level, it's the decibel level on a neighboring property, not at the place where it's happening. So, you know, if you have a large property, you can still have a noise. You can have a conversation in your property. But if you're having, you know, if your noise is keeping your neighbors awake, you know, a lot, or some of the places are making noise all day long. If you owned a business, right now, the way our rules are said, if somebody next to you was playing a loud stereo all day and you couldn't talk to your customers, there's nothing they could do because it wouldn't fall under our bylaws. It might be the nuisance with the RCMP, but they're basing a lot of their enforcement on our bylaws, or lack of enforcement on our lack of a bylaw. And I think we need times.
If I could, and speaking of
and if this doesn't get taken, this could spread. I mean, we're having one issue now, But if this issue doesn't get taken care of, this could spread to other areas, and you could have a greater problem around the county with no enforcement. And I think having rules in place stops a reasonable person from doing it, makes enforcement available for an unreasonable person.
The RCMP have always said that because complaints have always been made under the bylaw.
Yeah.
If a person were to make, to go to the station or call the station and said they wished to make a disturbing the peace complaint, that becomes a criminal offense.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with our bylaw. And often that disturbing the peace holds a lot more weight to those who are actually doing that than a noise bylaw. And I, you know, and it may come, it may well be that regardless of what's done, people are going to have to make the disturbing the peace complaint to the RCMP, file the paperwork, and be ready to go to court and talk about how their neighbors are disturbing their peace. That is a criminal offense.
Yeah.
Having said that, we need to get back to our bylaw. So 11 to 7.
Yes.
11 to 7, it's a time most people would like to see change.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping in mind in the summer, some people like to get up and mow their grass early in the morning. As a counselor, you'll have to take that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's daylight at 5:30 in the morning. We live in the country. You're restricting everyone not to be making any sounds that will disturb their neighbor until 7 o'clock. Carl's shaking his head no. Pardon?
I get up early in the morning and with firewood, whatever, right? That's, you know.
7 o'clock, 11 to 7. So these are things that we can have investigated, keeping in mind we are a regional county.
Yeah.
We can't restrict the noise people make on their boats, right? That's not a noise bylaw that we can restrict.
Bylaws help the people that can't get along with their neighbors, that will not associate, will not. If I go mow my lawn at 6 o'clock in the morning, my neighbors are not gonna care. Because I'm not gonna do it in the first place, but if I did, they've got something to work with, right? If I'm gonna be that inconsiderate, then something's in place that they can say, look, the bylaw says this. And it's awful that we have to do that, but sometimes your neighbors don't care. So if Carl wants to go and chop his wood or do whatever at 5:30 in the morning, his neighbors don't mind, that's not a problem. The problem is if he's disturbing the neighbors and he wants to stop. I think that's one of the reasons for the bylaws. We have to have something in place so people that we can enforce.
So direction to staff, can we, this is February, you know, we're in the midst of budget and we've just got some new people in, and I suspect this problem will come up again the May long weekend. In order to get a bylaw rewritten, you're looking at months.
Yep.
To get it through, and we'll be looking at budgeting for someone to redo it. Any other opinions on it? Councilor Mews?
I've had complaints about noises as I've been councilor, and I know Jack has complaints up Milton about noises, you know, and people with four-wheelers with really loud exhaust or no exhaust. And so I don't think it's just the area that we're discussing, Councilor Brown's district. You know, and I think that we should work with the RCMP and to find out maybe they have some ideas on what we can do for a noise bylaw. But, you know, if it's going to take months, we got to start it sometime.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see what the difference is now.
So that's direction for staff, to investigate rewriting,
mm-hmm.
to having someone rewrite this bylaw, to include 11 to 7 as a suggested time. Decibel readers, just look at various options and then bring them back in what time period?
whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, yeah.
Yeah.
Chances are it won't be ready by May.
I agree, and I think,
Do you understand that?
I think the majority of people that are complaining and having a problem realize that it takes time and they just want to see the process started. They, you know, they want to see, they want to know that the process is starting, and I think, you know, their neighbors who are causing a problem once this process gets started may see that it's not in their best interest to continue the activities that they're doing. So I think, you know, I think doing all of this will benefit everybody in the long run.
And maybe when we do get complaints from neighbors and their adjoining neighbors and foul language and loud music and
yes.
and dogs barking all day long, then a suggestion for them to contact the RCMP.
Yes.
And actually go up and make a complaint for disturbing the peace.
And
it has a lot more weight than our noise bylaw is going to have.
In a number of cases, this has been done.
That they should be going.
Yeah.
They come to us. They should be going to RCMP.
That's a criminal offense.
If they want, if
yeah.
they're really serious about it.
And in some of these cases, they have gone to the RCMP and they haven't gotten satisfaction because the RCMP have told them that there's no rules to enforce in Queens County.
Disturbing the peace.
Yes.
I think there's a misunderstanding.
I think so, yes.
Because the question was asked of the staff sergeant who
yes.
was here.
Yes.
He didn't say it was a problem with their bylaw. And in my discussions with them and my discussions with some other people in the court system, they do not want to prosecute someone and give them a criminal record, which it would be a criminal record
right.
for disturbing the peace, for playing loud music.
Yes.
That's their hesitation. They'd much rather us enforce a rule under a municipal bylaw, which doesn't give somebody a criminal record. But as the mayor said, if somebody is being really obnoxious, really annoying, and so on and so forth, then they're more willing and open if someone wants to come forward and sign make a statement, go to court and testify, and those types of things. Then it's probably worthy of the court considering whether it should be a criminal record for those people because they are being not nice people versus people simply out cutting wood at 6 in the morning. They don't want to give him a criminal record for that.
No.
But they also don't want to give him a $500 fine for that. So that's the balance we're trying
yeah.
to find. And that was what the staff sergeant hinted at. So I don't think anybody has said if they have it's improper that the bylaw wasn't enforceable. It's more...
Okay.
The provincial, they don't want to give somebody a criminal record for what they would see as a minor offense.
Okay, I stand
so,
correct.
Because it would limit people from getting jobs and employment and all that stuff
yeah.
if they have a criminal record.
That's right. Okay.
Councilor,
I think what we're really just trying to do is trying to establish some parameters that we'd like to be able to work under. And for most people, they're going to work, if I'm cutting wood at 6 o'clock in the morning, the fellow says, look, I'm trying to sleep, I just come off night shift, could you please stop that? that you can be able to work with reasonable people. We're talking about working with reasonable people. When they're unreasonable, then it has to go to a different level.
The complaint I hear most about is people's dogs barking all day.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of the noise bylaws take that into account.
Chris, do you understand
your direction? I do.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.